from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
The United States Senate is ready to take a critical vote. Venezuela blocks aid for its people, and the media continues to get it wrong. That's all coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. On Monday evening, there's going to be a roll call vote in the Senate on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, and it's critical that you call your senators from now through Monday and urge them to support this life-saving bill. That number to call is 202-224-3121. Again, that's 202-224-3121. And I'll be giving you that number again at the end of our first segment. The man that introduced the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act is Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. Senator Sasse is a steadfast advocate for life, and he joined FRC President Tony Perkins on Thursday to talk about his bill.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for the invitation, and thanks for the stuff you're fighting for today.
Well, let's talk about your bill. You tried to get it onto the Senate floor a couple of weeks ago by unanimous consent. That was blocked by Patty Murray. Going to try it again. What do the prospects look like?
Well, first of all, let's just say what it is. I mean, this is some pretty basic stuff. There is nothing here that should be controversial or should require any courage from politicians, because what we're talking about is that a baby is a baby, and that should have nothing to do with your politics. It should be about, if you have a heart, you believe that a baby that's born alive has a right and has dignity and has worth. And so I've been fighting for 3 years to get a recorded floor vote for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And when it was blocked, when we tried to do it by unanimous consent, I'm happy that the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, agreed to schedule floor time to actually vote on it on Monday night. This should be the kind of thing that passes 100-0, but it didn't pass 100-0. So now it should be the sort of thing that passes overwhelmingly. And I got to be honest, there are a whole bunch of Democrats now who look like they're trying to claim that this is somehow controversial to say that a baby that's been born alive should be protected. And so I'm not going to prognosticate about what the vote count is going to be, but I know what it should be. It should be indisputably unanimous.
Now, let's be very clear so our listeners understand what we're talking about here. This is not a ban on third trimester abortions. This is about a baby who survives an attempted abortion and is born alive, cannot then be killed or left to die, but rather that they are given medical assistance.
You got it. I'm as pro-life as anybody could possibly be in the United States Senate, but this bill is actually not about abortion. This bill is about a baby that has survived an abortion and been born alive and is on that table cold and fighting for life and crying out. And it's about the practice that's known as backing away, where abortion providers then back away from the table and just leave the baby to die by exposure and the elements. Nothing should be controversial about that. We should be providing the same level of care to these babies that we would to any other baby at the same stage of gestation when they're born alive.
I mean, Senator, you've made very clear that this really is an issue of infanticide and whether or not as a nation we want to be pushed to that point where we stand by and allow infanticide to occur within the borders of our country.
Yeah, I mean, in human history, this gross, tragic, disgusting practice has actually been prevalent in human history. The ancient Aztecs did it.
Right.
The ancient Greeks did it. They would try to evaluate if they thought a baby was undesirable. They'd go leave them on the hillside or the mountainside and let them die of exposure. And this debate, it's kind of amazing that we're having this debate in America right now, but you see both New York and Virginia movements to sort of extend the ability of ability isn't even the right word, but the sort of tolerance of people to kill babies to beyond birth. And so in New York, what we saw the governor do, Governor Cuomo, when New York passed a law a month ago that repealed protections for infant babies that were born alive during a botched abortion. Cuomo then lit up the World Trade Center in pink to celebrate this pro-death movement. Think about what that means. Pink has historically been the symbolic color of women who survive breast cancer. This is about gritty, persevering women who are celebrating life, and now they're trying to take that color and pervert it and make it a celebration of death. And in Virginia, we've seen their disgraced governor, Ralph Northam, who obviously has all sorts of problems understanding human dignity in general, out there actively defending infanticide. It is a bizarre cultural moment we're at.
It is, because isn't this something that is distinguished America, we might call it American exceptionalism, as we have seen the advancement of Western civilization, an understanding that each and every human being has dignity and worth. I mean, isn't that what has caused us to stand apart?
Amen. I mean, that if you wanted to say what is the exceptional idea that America is founded on, we believe in limited government precisely because we believe in limitless human rights, and we don't believe in pragmatic or utilitarian calculations of whether or not a life has worth. We say when a baby is born, we believe in equality. We believe in universal human dignity. Those of us that come out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, we talk about image bearers. We talk about the dignity and worth of these children and about whether or not we're going to protect them. And there's a whole bunch of people in the United States Senate that throw around the language of the poorest and the most vulnerable among us on topic after topic after topic. Well, on Monday night, you're actually going to get to see the United States Senate have a chance to put individual senators put their money where their mouth is and see if they really want to stand with the little guy. Because the little guy is that little guy or gal on that table fighting for life, and whether or not you're going to provide basic care that you would provide to any other baby at that stage of gestation.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, my guest, discussing his bill, which will be on the Senate floor this coming Monday. It is the Senate Bill 311. It is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And, you know, Senator, we've not always gotten it right in America in terms of recognizing the dignity of the individual and the value of each and every human being. But we've usually been moving in a trajectory that moves us in the right direction. This is stepping backwards, and I think could have significant ramifications for us as a country when it comes to the culture, comes to the moral standing of America. And this, to me, is a defining moment for our nation.
I think you're right. This is an opportunity. This legislation on Monday night is a chance for 100 people who are elected to represent the American people to stand before the 320 million folks that are actually our bosses and say whether or not we're pro common sense, pro compassion, pro science, pro baby, which is it's a pretty simple thing to do. But right now, the U.S. is one of only four countries on earth that allow abortion up to the moment of birth. And the human rights abusers we stand with there are Vietnam and China. That's really what's going on right now in the sort of moral calculus of the country. And in New York and Virginia, you see this movement trying to pay less and less attention to the dignity of babies at exactly the point that our young people in America are becoming more pro-life. What we see happening in this movement of compassion and science, frankly, is more in utero images of babies being available to us as technology advances, and younger people who tend to be more image culture saturated are seeing more pictures of what happens in utero, and younger people are becoming more pro-life. Strangely, the politics of the left in a number of these states is moving in exactly the opposite direction.
You know, Senator Sasse, that brings up a good point, because you're absolutely right. When you look at technology, it is moving us in the direction of life. The younger generation, more pro-life than their parents. Could this be kind of the last grasp of the abortion lobby to try to surge forward, knowing that their days are limited when we see what's been happening in state legislatures across the country and, quite frankly, where we see the court moving in a direction of recognizing that each and every human being has dignity, and then, you know, maybe sending this back to the states and letting the states decide? I mean, is that part of this, you think?
I kind of have the same thought and wonder, which is
you see more and more radical politics being advanced by certain interest groups. I mean, the Planned Parenthood abortion lobby, for instance, Planned Parenthood is by far the largest abortion provider in America, and they make tons and tons of money off every abortion that they're delivering. They're so out of touch with where the science is going and where American sensibilities are going that I do think there's some of it that's just political power play. But I do also think there's a philosophical side to the movement, to part of the pro-death movement in this. And if you look at people like Peter Singer, the philosopher at Princeton, mm-hmm. he is very intentionally defining life as based on its utilitarian value. And so if you might have some birth defects and other disabilities and challenges, he says, well, why should society think that you have any worth? You're not going to be able to contribute much to society. Those lives should be able to be snuffed out. And I think some of the folks that defend this repugnant practice of so-called backing away from the table when these babies are born alive, some of them are just very philosophically motivated by a utilitarian calculus that rejects the dignity and worth of those babies.
Senator, before I know you got to go, before we let you go, what do you need our listeners to do between now and Monday?
Well, thank you for drawing attention to this, frankly. And I know you gave out your number for folks to call in and be transferred, get the information about how they can lobby their senators. I think all 100 senators need to know that they're going to be on record. They have an opportunity to unanimously say the most basic thing imaginable, which is that it's wrong to kill a newborn baby. And I think there are a number of senators who know in their gut what the right thing to do is, but they're scared and they need to know that their voters are on the side of life.
And we'll also be praying. A very significant moment for our nation. Senator Ben Sasse, thank you so much for joining us today and for your leadership on this critical issue.
Thanks for the time.
You can find out more about Senator Sasse and the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act when you visit tonyperkins.com. And that number to contact your senators again is area code 202-224-3121. Also, while you're there, check out FRC's new publication and video series, Top 10 Myths About Abortion. And why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the donate button. Your financial help is critical and you can make a difference. That website once more is tonyperkins.com.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. For months, you've been hearing about the growing humanitarian crisis happening down in Venezuela. And now, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has rejected offers of foreign food and medicine while accusing opposition leader Juan Guaido of using the aid to undermine his government. Joining Tony Perkins on Thursday to talk about the tragic situation in Venezuela was Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, who sits on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and is a member of the House Freedom Caucus.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the work you do, and it was good to see you. I think it was last week up in D.C., wasn't it?
It was. Thank you so much. It was good to see you as well. This is a crisis. I mean, there's so many crises in the world that it's hard to focus on all of them. But this is becoming a major humanitarian crisis when you look at the number of refugees trying to flee Venezuela and Nicolas Maduro refusing to allow relief supplies to come into the country.
It really is. And what you just said there drives the point home. Maduro wants to say that this is America doing this. When you have 3 million people in your country wanting to get out of it, it's not because America is doing anything. It's because Maduro has done such a terrible job of ruining that country with the resources they have. And this is clearly a failed government. And his last election was nothing short of a sham. And so when you have, you've also got 50 countries, over 50 countries recognizing Juan Guaido as the interim president, as their constitution says he has the right to do.
Now, when you look at Venezuela, I mean, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries. I mean, the oil that they have there, the reserves there are equal to what Saudi Arabia has. But yet they've squandered it, and their people are literally dying in hunger.
They really are. And, you know, living in Florida where I live, I've got a lot of clients and friends that are from Venezuela. And so we get firsthand reports of what really is happening on the ground. And it's an ugly mess. It really is. And it is, as you said, it's a failed socialist country that the people of Venezuela are suffering. You've got parents dropping off children in hospitals because of starvation, and a lot of those kids are dying. And, you know, the other interesting thing about this is Maduro, or his security force, has an elite group of Cuban soldiers from the Castro regime protecting him because he doesn't have full faith of his generals. And so that's who his military security force is. In addition, there's an estimate of 40,000 Cuban troops that have been in Venezuela as kind of his brown shirts, I guess, lack of a better word.
That leads me to the two other questions I want to ask you. One is, Cuba has basically drawn a line in the sand, which it's, I don't know, almost comical, but they're challenging the United States, if we get involved, that it may trigger a response from them. But you also have Russia involved in this as well. Are there concerns that this could trigger something bigger?
It is. And, you know, you brought up a great point. In fact, I brought this up in one of our foreign affairs meetings we had. We had the interim ambassador, I forget his name, from Venezuela. And I said, this is more than just what's going on in Venezuela, because who do you have supporting Maduro? You've got Cuba, you've got Russia, right. China, Iran, and Turkey. So you've got all anti-Western democracies supporting a failed regime in Venezuela. And so if this is being played out, and I see this as the Rubicon, Venezuela, because if Venezuela fails, Cuba automatically fails, because they're the ones that have been propping them up. And then China and Russia, can they afford to have another socialist, communist, dictator-type country fall by the wayside that they've been propping up as a better way? And I think this is, like you said, this is much more than just about Venezuela, because as Venezuela goes, so does Cuba.
I think that's right. And then my second question I wanted to ask you is, how key is the military, the Venezuelan military, to the outcome of this? As you said, he can't trust him. He's got Cuban forces protecting him. If the military goes over to Guaido, is that it for Maduro?
I think it is. And that's something we hope that happens quickly, with very little bloodshed. The right thing to do would be for Maduro to step down. But when you have a despot like him, they never want to step down, because they're never at fault, you know. And so I think what you'll see is the military will side with Guaido. You know, there's already been talk of giving them amnesty, come on over. And when you look at the elite military, along with Maduro, they have siphoned over $11 billion from the resources of petroleum that they've enriched themselves at the expense of the Venezuelan people.
Well, it is, in fact, a crisis. Congressman Yoho, thanks
crisis,
so much.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you, Tony. Keep up the great job.
You can find out more about Representative Ted Yoho when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider joining with us through your financial partnership? Your financial help is critical, and you can make a difference. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener, replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet, and share legislative alerts with your contacts, and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Over the course of the last month, the mainstream news media has gotten two significant stories completely wrong. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins as he talked about those cases last Thursday and was later joined by Rich Noyes from the Media Research Center.
The first story, the media outlets like the Washington Post jumped on the bandwagon and drew inaccurate conclusions about the alleged confrontation between the Native American veteran named Nathan Phillips and several Covington, Kentucky Catholic high school students at the end of the March for Life last month. Well, it turns out the students were not guilty of anything. In fact, they were the ones that were being harassed. And so now they are suing the Washington Post, one of the students, for $250 million, and I hope they get every penny of it, quite frankly. And in the second, a more recent story, Empire actor Jussie Smollett claimed that he was the victim of a hate crime in which two masked men cited his ethnicity and his homosexual lifestyle while they attacked him, leaving a noose draped around his neck. Turns out that Smollett might have staged the whole thing himself and is being, in fact, was just released moments ago from jail. Now, here's what the Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said earlier today.
I come to you not only as the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, but also as a black man who spent his entire life living in the city of Chicago. I know the racial divide that exists here. I know how hard it's been for our city and our nation to come together. And I also know the disparities, and I know the history. So I'm offended by what's happened, and I'm also angry. I love the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, warts and all. But this publicity stunt was a scar that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve. To make things worse, the accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor. I only hope that the truth about what happened receives the same amount of attention that the hoax did.
Well, will it? Joining me now to talk about it is Rich Noyes, Research Director at the Media Research Center. Rich, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So do you think the media will now go back and pay as much attention to this as they did before?
Well, it's going to be hard. I mean, the Jussie Smollett case received 157 minutes of coverage on just the big three ABC, CBS, NBC morning and evening newscasts in about 2 weeks. They might stick with it. This has become a sensational story, and it really is an excessive story, but it didn't need to be this hyped up in the first place, and it didn't need to be this one-sided in the beginning. This was something that people could see through early on, and I think, if you look at both this case and the one of the Covington students, there's this common thread of painting Trump supporters as automatic bad guys. The kid in the MAGA hat has to be the bad guy in that situation. Jussie Smollett invented the detail that, according to police, of his attackers wearing MAGA hats. And I think this is where the media's bias really gets them into trouble. They see something like that, it matches their prejudiced view of the world, and they don't look at it with the same scrutiny they would if the roles were reversed. And I think this is why, they have egg on their face, in this case, in the Covington case, and potentially in others.
Now, Rich, but wasn't there a time in journalism where you put your, we all have biases. We all have a worldview that we bring to the table no matter who we are, what we do. But wasn't there a time when professional journalists put those personal views aside and asked questions before they ran with stories?
They did, or if they didn't, their editors did it for them and told them they had to do it. I think what's lacking is you have newsrooms now that really are so one-sided. There's nobody in these newsrooms who reflects the other side. If you had even 25 or 30% of the people at one of these big newspapers who had voted for Trump or who, had Trump supporters in their family, they might be a lot more sensitive to these kinds of portrayals and say, hey, wait a second, what are you doing? This doesn't seem right. You're painting with a broad brush, or let's take a look at it from the other perspective. But if it's all these liberals with the same groupthink, and then talking to audiences that have sort of a one-sided point of view, living inside their own bubble. I don't think you're going to get press that is really trying to sort of look for the truth as much as it's trying to keep repeating the story that their audiences want to hear and getting the clicks or the views or whatever.
Is it also this where, you know, almost everybody can be a reporter today? Is there this idea that they have to, you know, be first out with this and so they don't check their facts as well?
Well, I don't know if they're trying to beat social media, but I think they're heavily being led by social media. I mean, remember the Covington story. This was somebody who eventually had their account suspended by Twitter because of their dishonesty, put out a doctored video of that confrontation and floated it into news circles and liberal circles, and they all got excited about it and thought what they were seeing was as it happened. It took until you had much longer mm-hmm. video before that was exposed. So they let themselves be led by social media. And there was a social media, emotional outpouring for Jussie Smollett before people really stopped and gave that sort of a critical examination. You know, so reporters, I think, they live on social media. They're influenced by the trends on social media. They may be, you know, not following a good sampling of America, but sort of more people who are sort of in their circles. But those trends are not making them more professional or more careful. It's, in fact, bringing the profession down to the level of social media.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that they are being led as they see this stuff out here. And quite frankly, I think journalists have gotten lazy. Where, you know, they don't do as much of the legwork checking out these stories as they used to. They're spoon-fed in many ways, and I guess social media is now the one that's feeding them a lot of these stories.
I think that's right, and I think, you know, if you look at the lawsuit against the Washington Post in the case of the Covington kids, the lawyers there put together a very careful report on what was really happening versus what was in the newspapers, and it really does paint a picture of journalists who just wanted to print what they heard without checking it out, versus the lawyers checked it out. They did the journalist's job for them. And, you have a much more careful, honest view of what happened. That's not a good view for the profession of journalism.
Rich, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the great work that Media Research Center does. And I just want to thank you for joining us today to take a look at these two stories.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.